But ask yourself, if we'd learned on November 22, 1963, that the Premier of Russia had been shot from a Moscow office building by a lonely capitalist sympathizer who himself was then liquidated by a patriotic Muscovite within 48 hours while surrounded by armed police, I think it would be pretty apparent to any free-thinking person that a coup d'etat and a transfer of power had just taken place in the Soviet Union. And we would not be asking questions or attacking Jim Garrison or his record. We would, in a free-thinking society, be asking hard questions about why he was killed and what forces were opposed to him. Y'all gotta start thinking on a different level, like the CIA does. Now, we're through the looking glass here, people. White is black, and black is white.
The government's been in bed with the entire telecommunications industry since the 40s. They've infected everything. They get into your bank statements, computer files, email, listen to your phone calls, every wire, every airwave. The more technology you use, the easier it is for them to keep tabs on you. It's a brave new world out there. At least it better be.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.
Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. We're on the line with Greg Hallett, the author of Hitler Was a British Agent. It's an honor, Greg, to have you here on Cloak and Dagger to share your treasury of wisdom and knowledge about this subject, and we welcome you here to Cloak and Dagger. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, this is your book has just been released. It's called Hitler Was a British Agent. It's a tremendous book. I recommend it to everybody. It's a wonderful, well-documented, thick book. Greg, how did you get into this? Give us some background.
It took me 20 years to get my first interview with the right people. I lived in the Eastern Bloc during the Cold War and made a few contacts and developed a few things. And from there I interviewed the KGB. On the 9th of December 1989 in Moscow. And at the time, the KGB weren't getting paid. So you could get information for the price of lunch. So I took the KGB agent who was following me out to lunch, and he gave me some insight into New Zealand and Australia. And I wrote my first book, Are You My Father? The Family Court and Other Experiments, about the Cold War program to defather families in order to create criminals and base and break down Western society. And I published that one in Mother's Day, May 2002. And then in January 2003, I started writing a series of 10 books. Four of those were on Hitler, and Hitler Was a British Agent is the first volume in that series.
Now, let's just back up. You're out of New Zealand, I assume. You're out of New Zealand?
Yeah, I was out of New Zealand. I was living in Budapest during the Cold War from 1989 to 1990. And I got a job as a project manager at Ferryhead Edge Airport One in Budapest for an American company. And that was on the 2nd of November 1989. And then the Berlin Wall came down a week later. And there was a discussion in the company about who to send to Russia to buy some buildings there, because we knew that when you change from communism to capitalism, the buildings go up in value about 2.5 times in about the same number of months. And at the time, Moscow was the most dangerous city in the world, and I was the least valuable employee, so I got sent.
Now, let's get back to Hitler. In the book, I notice you show his background with his father and his family life, and the connection and how he was a illegitimate son of one of the Rothschilds. And He went back to England and was trained at Tavistock. For those listening, what sort of an assignment was Hitler actually on? Because did the Rothschilds make a lot of money as a result of him?
Oh, huge, huge. The Rothschilds and the investment bankers, the international bankers, they made huge profits out of World War One and World War Two. They needed enemies, and they needed enemies that were their puppets that they could control.
Right.
So Tavistock has been training the enemies of Britain and America for the last century and up to 500 years ago.
And this is all the Hegelian dialectic, finance both sides, and that way you can't lose.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone else ends up poor and you end up rich because you're the only unit available that's not getting attacked, funding both sides, and his position's not getting destroyed.
Right. Now, at Tavistock, they trained Hitler.
Yeah.
Was it heavy mind control? Like, was he a catcher in the rye sort of a guy? And was there somebody babysitting him once he left?
He had minders. He had minders. It's called deconstruction, and I first became aware of deconstruction when I was in Moscow entering the KGB. I noticed that virtually the entire society of Moscow was deconstructed about 80%. So I'd experienced a government deconstruction program, deconstruction-reconstruction program, in New Zealand in the early 1980s, so I knew what it was about, and I'd studied various psychological models so I could think in terms of psychological models.
Right.
And that was how I could recognize that Hitler was deconstructed and a whole lot of other people had been deconstructed, and the certain subtle traits that they have. But I leaked it out that I knew this in January 2002, and then I had a Western scientist from Germany, a Western German scientist who lived in Russia. He flew out to New Zealand and briefed me and showed me the equipment that the KGB used now for deconstruction, and he converted it to reconstruction of the subconscious. And it was after spending about 3 weeks with him that I met the intelligence agents who helped me to write the book, including the spymaster and James Bond III.
That must have been very interesting meeting them.
It's always interesting. It's never not interesting. And they're always really informative. So we've been telling stories now for 3 years, and I've been recording them. And
uh-huh.
One tells me a story, and I check it up on the net or check it up with books, and then I tell it to the other ex-intelligence agent. And then he adds a bit to it, and I write that up, and I include it, and I research that, and I take it to the first intelligence officer, ex-intelligence officer, and then he checks it and makes alteration, and that process goes on and on and on for a number of years until we end up with the correct story. And some of the stories get thrown out as being not correct or inconclusive. So the books essentially had three very experienced editors on it. So the Hitler was a British agent, and it's really an intelligence version of history.
Yes. Now, let me ask you this. So, how did it logistically work when they sent him back to Germany? What sort of who was around him who was actually in on the plan?
Captain Rome.
And so
the homosexual leader of. He was actually brought back from Bolivia as a deputy Führer. Most of the people who are deconstructed by foreign nationals have wood on them, and wood is aspects of their life that they're ashamed of, and shame is used to control them. And Captain Rome was a homosexual, and Hitler was a homosexual and a coprophiliac.
Now, what about at the end of the war? Everybody'd be interested in finding out What actually happened to the entity known as Adolf Hitler? What happened?
Well, the first thing that goes in war is the truth. And the first thing that goes even in the build-up to a war is the truth. Now, Hitler was in the bunker and he got married at midnight on the 29th of April 1945.
Yeah.
A doppelganger flew out on a, I think it's called a Rado 234 plane.
Uh-huh.
And then on the about the 28th of April, Hitler ordered the tunnels flooded. Now, the tunnels are below the water level of the upper side of the River Spree and above the water level of the lower side. So he opened the upper gates and they flooded. And at the time, they were a Red Cross hospital with lots of nurses and doctors and injured soldiers in them. So they flooded and they opened the lower gate and let all the bodies out, and then Hitler escaped out of the bunker and travelled through the tunnels to a WK-202 submarine, which is a mini submarine about 35 metres long.
Uh-huh.
And then he travelled down the River Spree into Lake Havel and hid in Lake Havel for a day and a half, and he was picked up on the 2nd of May at around 4 p.m. By Hannah Wright in a Junkers 52 3M G14E. And the Junkers plane was essentially a hot rod. It looked like a crappy old car with a corrugated iron shell, but this model was heavily armored. It was armor plated for the pilot. And that flew to Lake Mugglesea, which took about 18 minutes or so. And landed on Lake Mugglesea, which is above Berlin, in kind of southeast Berlin, and then was met by a motor launch with Ian Fleming and Carolyn Saunders on board. Carolyn Saunders later became the head of M.
Who he was met by Ian Fleming?
Ian Fleming.
Yes, who worked with...
Winnie the Pooh.
Who worked with William Stevenson, the quiet Canadian, Intrepid.
Yep. Yeah.
And other members of British SAS?
Yeah, he was basically 2IC of Naval Intelligence. So he pretty much worked with everyone.
A lady by the name of Saunders and Ian Fleming met him in the boat, and what happened next?
They exchanged, Hitler presented them with bank account numbers in Switzerland of Nazi bank accounts and locations of artifacts.
Right.
And some of them were full numbers and some of them were partial numbers. And then they beached the motor launch and jumped into a Westland Lysander 3A, which is a British STOL plane or VTOL plane with short takeoffs and landings. And then they flew to Barcelona and were met by the former 2IC of General Franco, Ramon Serrano Suna. And he lived in Barcelona for the next 5 years.
Interesting.
Where he was known as the German gardener. And he took care of roses, and he lived in the Parc du Citadella, which is opposite the National History Museum.
And did he maintain contact with the rat line and those who were taken out to South America? I understand Bormann made it to South America. Is there any evidence that did he cut his ties completely and go underground, or did he keep some communication with that network, that Nazi network?
I honestly don't know.
Don't know. Yep.
I don't know. I haven't written it, and I don't know. I haven't researched.
Did he die in Barcelona eventually?
Yeah. What happened was some cadets from Ireland came down to Barcelona for Christmas and New Year's in 1949-1950, and one of the cadets was 23, and he went for a walk on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, about sort of 1 in the morning, and he met with Hitler, and Hitler spoke perfect English, because Hitler could always speak English, because he was trained in Tavistock.
Right.
And they spoke about the roses. And then the Irish cadet went back to his sergeant and he said, I've just been speaking to Hitler in English about his roses. And it went up the intelligence tree and they decided that Hitler was posed more of a risk than the value that he was, and he was knocked off with the radiation plates fitted in his mattress, which gave him stomach cancer, and he died 6 weeks later in February 1950.
He died in February of 50 in Barcelona.
Yeah.
What was done, to the best of your knowledge, with his body and his remains? Were they? Is there any resting place? Was he?
I don't know.
Right.
I haven't researched it, and I just don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Well, what other? The book is just a terrific compilation of the war, and it's very exciting because people would would be shocked to find out about this, but certainly we from what we do at Cloak and Dagger, it's nothing new. What other projects are you going to work on now? Like who are the other enemies that they're putting forward that you discovered in your exploration of Hitler?
When you talk to
what about Mao, and what about the Cold War enemies? Were they
The Cold War virtually started on the 1st of May 1945 in the search for Hitler, and Russia and America used the search for Hitler to set up intelligence bases all around the world. There's a search for Hitler in South America until just after J. Edgar Hoover died in 72. So that gave them 27 years of excuses. And if you look at the amount of reporting done by the G-men in South America, they were doing something like one report every 12 years on Hitler. So, it was just an excuse for the beginning of the Cold War. And every war, every new war, is built on the lies of the previous war. So if you want to come up with the truth now, you have to go back through the cycle, the 60-year cycle, and come up with the truth of what happened then, and then you can understand the Cold War more.
Well, have you found any, in your travels, did you find any more any evidence that Hitler had any children, and that would his children be of any value to the authorities today?
No, I haven't looked at it. I know he had some. He had a nephew and some grandnephews. They live in Long Island in New York. But he had four sons, and one of them was killed, I think, just before or just after he got married. And that's written up in the Irish Roots magazine. I actually didn't look for any evidence of children. No stories came up about him having children.
Right, right.
Not to say that they won't surface in the future, but I haven't uncovered anything.
Oh, maybe you could say a little thing about his. He came out of a situation where uncles were marrying and having relationship with nieces. His mother was also his aunt. Have I got it right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you could talk about how that all came about.
Well, so incest was very common in the Hitler family, and it was very common in Bavaria. And incest was largely cured by the motor car. You could drive to another village for a shag, rather than, being too tired from your day's work in the field to actually walk to the next village. So there was this inbreeding going on all the time, and that meant that newborn babies were prone to dominant genetic defects, and Hitler had three of his siblings die, and he had a younger brother, 5 years younger, called Edmund. And he died, Edmund died about the same year that Hitler was born. And Hitler used Edmund's birth certificate to get into England.
Right.
Under an assumed name. Hitler actually, he was trained in Tavistock from February to November 1912. And then from November 1912 to May 1913, he actually lived with his half-brother and sister-in-law in Liverpool.
And he spent some time in Ireland as well, did he not? Was that
Stalin was also trained in Tavistock.
Yeah.
Stalin actually lived in London from April 1907 to January 1912, I think.
Right. So these guys were all being
siege.
Trained,
And he was also trained in the Cyclops School in Ireland, which has since closed down.
Now, you let me just mention, there was another thing you had mentioned in the book, that he was once within 2 kilometers of Churchill.
Yes.
Did they ever? What sort of a meeting would they have had, do you think?
Well, see, Hitler used to escape into a cathedral and draw the inside and outside of the cathedral. It was more like a village church, and largely surrounded by a lot of dead bodies.
Uh-huh.
And Churchill was supposed to have spent 6 months on the front at, what's it called? The name eludes me now.
Yeah, go ahead. It's not important. It's actually the name.
Ardennes, around Ardennes.
Yeah, the Ardennes.
And so, you know, they were within 2 kilometers of each other. They were both bred as agents of war and enemy agents of war. So the chances of them meeting was very high.
Yes.
And during the Second World War, the British High Command was constantly in telephone contact with the German High Command of equal rank. And that phone calls could be made from both sides. And we also had British MI6 agents trained to fly Luftwaffe aircraft and German Luftwaffe pilots trained to fly British aircraft. We also had Britain supplying 87 octane gas in their bases, which were only used by German aircraft. So there were a lot of flights happening between Britain and Germany, and also meetings in neutral countries like Cyprus and the Middle East. And Churchill would set up a doppelganger who was trained to look like him and sound like him, and then get on a plane and fly across the Channel, and then he got this doppelganger got blown up. He's actually a famous actor. He's in Gone with the Wind. Meanwhile, Churchill would fly elsewhere. And so we had a lot of meetings going on between equals in the high command, supposedly along enemy lines. We also had Canaris phoning up the British and the Dutch and Norwegians and telling them when and where the Germans were going to invade. So you know, there were double agents right through the war from the beginning, some beneficial and some not. And double agents at the end of the war. We had Germans getting British medals and Germans getting American medals at the end of the war, some of them posthumously. It was just a spy's paradise.
Right. Well, it's all very, very interesting. It shows you the real machinations going on backstage in the global theater.
Yeah.
And certainly it explains a lot. What would you make of Hess's trip? Certainly Hitler was in cahoots with the Fabian Society and with the aristocracy, the English aristocracy. Did you come up with anything about Hess's flight back to England at some point during the war? I don't remember the date that he did.
Yeah, the 11th May, 10th and 11th May 1941, Hess and Doppelganger Hess flew in, one plane above the other,
uh-huh.
Across the English Channel, initially guided by Heidrick, who was a pilot, and a couple of...
Yes, Heidrick, he's well talked about, yes.
Yeah, and they flew into Scotland, and the real Hess, who was a pilot, peeled off into Prestwick below radar and with a whole lot of Liberator planes flying back to America at the same time. And then the doppelganger Hess went to land at Dungavel Castle to meet the Duke of Hamilton and Brandon, who's the same person.
Uh-huh.
And in spy talk, he was called Brandon. He was known as the Duke of Hamilton,
uh-huh.
was the Duke of Hamilton and Brandon, and was referred to as Brandon. The runway there was too short, so he carried on to Eaglesham Moor, ran out of petrol, flipped the plane, jumped out, clipped his foot. And then they were both taken custody. And then the real Hess offered a real peace agreement and was killed by the British. And doppelganger Hess was mind-altered in combination with OSS Canadian training and into believing that he was the real Hess. And then spent the rest of his life until the age of 93 at
Bandau
Prison. And, you know, it was essential to get rid of him before the Cold War finished.
Very interesting. Well, before we... I don't have any other real, you know, questions about... Is there anything that you think that I haven't gone into that you would like to say about the book? It must have been exciting. Are you getting a lot of interviews?
I'm getting a lot of
interviews.
Excellent feedback from a lot of educated people. And I'm yet to find an academic who's trained in history to criticize the book. And I'd very much like an historian from Oxford, Cambridge, Yale, Princeton, Harvard, something like that, to read the book and... have an interview, possibly with you, and to play the devil's advocate and to take the position that everything in the book is wrong and then argue it through.
Right, right.
I would very much like that.
Well, unfortunately, those who go to those universities have been not educated but heavily indoctrinated.
Absolutely.
And I don't really feel that they have... the mental stance required to open their minds to the truth. I find that their heavy indoctrination means that they're almost brainwashed in the same way Hitler was brainwashed, except to accept the world as they want to and are supposed to see it. Otherwise, they may lose their jobs. If they have tenure, maybe they'll be able to not be frightened to explore new ideas. But overall, it would be interesting. But you know, tossing around your knowledge for argument and display is not really the way to operate today. If you want to find the truth, you have to be prepared to organize ignorance for discovery and take the technique of the suspended judgment, which is what we as media scientists do. And it would be interesting to see that. Having come out of, years ago, a university background, I can tell you that I would, if I had continued under that indoctrination, I just wouldn't ever be able to accept your book, because I would have been indoctrinated not to accept your sources. And so I wouldn't be able to... I mean, they'll debate with you, but I think it's important for you to do. But for the audience, it's more important to dialogue, and that's what I wanted to do with you, because I do think that there's it's a wonderfully documented book, your book, footnoted, heavily documented, and for people who have an open mind, I think they're going to be very, very interested and surprised as to what really did happen with Adolf Hitler, and it shows the greater underground and the underbush, and what's the plans of these of the monarchies and the these oligarchs go very, very deep. They don't just plan these things decades in advance. Would you not say?
Yeah. Wars are actually planned sort of 30 and 60 years ahead.
Exactly.
Like the Afghan and Iraq war was planned in the early 1970s.
What can you say about what's happening today? Osama bin Laden, another must be another British SAS character. I mean, obviously he is. They're right under our nose. The state secrets are right under our noses that the ruling elite hope we don't learn. That's how they keep it.
If you read Hitler was a British agent and study it so that you can apply it, so you know it well enough to apply it, you can apply it to the current wars and see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
But what we get in the newspapers is the cover story. It's a bunch of lies and never the truth.
Yeah, they
the
want
to... The truth is usually a small, astounding comment that
exactly.
sheds light on everything.
Exactly.
And I've mentioned Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein briefly in this book. And in the afterword of this book, I said where Osama bin Laden was, and we had contact with someone who had met him recently, and no doubt he's been moved from there now, but at the time of writing, that's where he was.
Yeah, these guys are all Goldsteins. You know what I mean by that, right? From the 1984 novel by Orwell. They're all Goldsteins. They're all just set up. It's antithesis, thesis, synthesis. And we've got on our website the bank account that Saddam has at Coutts Bank London with the Queen. I mean, like, this is nothing new. They've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yep. Totally right there.
And they're probably training some more agents at Tavistock,
and
more enemies, to come to create more battles.
More conflict. Yeah. The big thing to remember is that the enemies of war are created, and they are the financial allies of the war makers.
Exactly. Yes. Now, I love the quotes. Before we go, I just want to go through, at the beginning of the book, you have the Churchill quote about the truth has to be surrounded by a bodyguard of lies. I think Hitler's quote, I don't have it in front of me right now.
Yeah,
Hitler,
I've got it in front of me.
Hitler was, one was attended. Yeah, go ahead and read that.
Churchill, in wartime the truth is so precious that she should always be attended by a bodyguard of lies.
Right.
Hitler, in wartime we provide truth with a bodyguard of lies because it is so precious. Tavistock Military Psychops War School Training Line, in wartime the truth is so precious we surround it with a bodyguard of lies.
Well, that's terrific, and it's certainly, obviously, both these men were Tavistock trained...
Absolutely.
Operatives and were employed in order to create the disease in order to offer the cure, and the cure always being, let's make a lot of money for the warmongers.
Yeah. One of the things we should remember is that, I think it's Rudolf Churchill was not...
Randolph, sorry.
Yep. Randolph Churchill was not Winston Churchill's biological father.
You mean is not? Winston was not his biological father?
Oh, Winston Churchill was not the biological
father
son
of Randolph.
Randolph
he adopted him, did he?
No, it was just a big cover.
Who was Randolph's real father? Do you mean
who was Winston's real father?
And who is that?
Comes out in another volume.
Oh, you've got that for your next book.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we definitely will wait for that. We'll wait for that. But by the way, Bill Clinton's real father is Winthrop Rockefeller, and Jimmy Carter's real father is Joseph Kennedy. Can you say something about who Harry and the other one's real father is? Or is that going to be for another volume? Because I don't think it's Prince Charles's kids.
I thought that Bill Clinton's father was Henry Rockefeller.
No, it's Winthrop.
Winthrop Rockefeller.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's interesting that the way these aristocracies work is they always keep the bloodlines quiet and invisible, so you can't figure out what's really happening behind the scenes. But listen, we'll leave it at that. It's been most interesting, and certainly when you come out with your next book, let us know in advance so we can promo it, and we're looking forward to it. But for all those who are listening, this is an excellent book. I recommend it. Lenny Bloom recommends it highly. It's a must-read for all those who want to keep up with what's going on backstage in the Global Theater. So thanks for joining us. Thank you for writing this book. And if you have any other briefings that you want to come on to Cloak and Dagger and update us on what's happening backstage in the Global Theater, we're always interested and we're full of open-minded people because we've seen this before and we know it's going to continue in the future.
Thank you very much.
Greg Hallett, it's been an absolute pleasure for you to be here. Please come back and make yourself accessible as much as possible, because it's awfully wonderful to have an expert like yourself to bring his treasury of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding about the history, because history's written by the winners, and we've got to find out what the losers and the others have to say. As James Joyce said, putting truth and untruth together, a shot may be made at what this hybrid was actually like to look at. And we've been blessed by having you with us today. We'll look forward to having you back again. Thanks very much, Greg.
Right. Cheers.
Cheers.